to Joey, Chris, and Gabe, Master of the Universe Horror Podcast, which, by the way, rocks. My name is Suzanne Snyder, and you guys need to listen to this podcast. Thanks.
Welcome back, everyone, to Master of the Universe Podcast, Episode 57. We're doing Sleepaway Camp, released in 1983. And this was a Gabe selection. I'm going to steal one of Gabe's lines. Funny enough, dude, today's July 15th, Iron Maiden released a new song for the first time in 6 years. It's been six fucking years, so I thought I'd stamp that on the podcast. It's called, what is it called? Writing on the Wall, The Writing's on the Wall, or something like that. That's a pretty cool tune. But when we come back, Gabe's going to go ahead and get us started on Sleepaway Camp. A cold summer night, see the mist rise from the lake. Their bodies still warm, though their lives have all escaped.
Ooh. All right, Sleepaway Camp. As we know, this is exactly how it sounds. This is about a camp. But not fully completely about the camp. We're going to be following the character Angela Baker. Now, in the beginning of this movie, it starts off with two little kids and what I'm assuming is their father, John. So it's Peter and Angela. These two little kids, they look like about at least, what, seven, 8 years old. They're all sitting in the lake. They're in the lake. They're sitting on a sailboat while the dad's kind of like looking around. Meanwhile, in the distance, you see this like speedboat kind of going around, and there's a girl on the other end of that speedboat. She's doing some water skiing, so it looks like they're all having a good time. Summertime feels, it's all the good stuff. Well, what happens is that the person driving the boat happens to be the lifeguard. Right next to him is a young girl, and she's asking a lifeguard, like, hey, you gotta let me go ahead and drive the boat. And he's like, yeah, right, I'm gonna lose my job. I don't think so. And she's all like, come on, what's so hard about it? I'm just going to go ahead and drive it around the water. Let me give it a spin. She just keeps nagging him. He's finally, all right. He gives in. Anyways, the father and the little kids are all in the water. The boat ended up tipping over. So they're like, okay, they're trying to get back up. Well, the girl happens to be the girl that was nagging. She ended up taking over on the boat. And she started driving. She's driving towards the two little kids and the dad. So, of course, you're thinking like, oh, shit, well, now this is where it all goes wrong. So she's trying to stop it. The lifeguard's like, no, you got to hit the brake. And she's trying to figure out. She doesn't know anything about what she's doing. She's just driving. And they're all fumbling around. Before you know it, he accidentally hits, like, the lever that makes the boat go faster. So what happens? They go straight into the little kids. They didn't even bother turning or anything like that. Hits the little kids, hits the father. The boat slows down and finally comes to a stop. They're all freaking out. There's a girl screaming, help these people.
That was like the funniest. Like, this movie has a few moments like that, but that was like the beginning of. Oh my God, what the fuck? I didn't see the whole movie in forever, dude. Huh?
That was the most epic scream I've ever seen in any horror movie.
It's ridiculous. I loved it too. She's just, her eyes are closed, and she's just like, man, that's like the Oscar performance for a fucking a horror movie like just showing like complete like, oh my god, you know. Chris, when that shit came out, dude, like that whole beginning scene, like it was so, I thought it was pretty funny the way the kids like walked up to the dad. They kind of like, they're like, hey, let's go fuck with them or something. And it was just kind of like, okay. But any of that shit stand out to you? Laugh? Anything?
No, yeah, no. I mean, like that fucking emoting of that girl. Like, oh no! Like, yeah. I mean, fuck. It was kind of like you want your initial reaction is say like she's like crazy over emoting acting, but then at the same time you say to yourself, you know, if I was really in a situation like that where we were really there to see something like that happen. Would it really be that far-fetched that some, you know, teenage girl would react that way?
I think you would act that way, Chris.
I think it's pretty spot on, you know. I think that there would be some not overreacting, but I mean, definitely there would be a lot of yelling. There would be a lot of panic. So, I mean, nobody wants to see anybody get hurt. And even then, like, though we see that kind of shit in the movies, to see it in real life, it's not... I mean, it's not the same. It's completely different. The tension is higher. People are, you know, scattered about. They're all some people even pass out just to see like a little bit of blood. So I can only imagine, you know, somebody that's weak sighted to blood, you know, seeing something like that would just be like, oh shit, you know, they'll probably pass out. But yeah, I mean, honestly, Chris is not far from that. I mean, that. I definitely see that panic, and that girl, man, did she panic? She
it's exactly what you would expect. Like you're saying, like from when someone sees some shit, you'd be like, oh fuck, you know?
Yeah, definitely. So at this point, so everyone's panic. Everyone, so you see, all you see is like one kid struggling. The other one, you see the life preserver, and then you see the father face down in the water floating. Now, his friend was just like, John. I guess that was, you know, that's his friend or whatever. That's his buddy, I guess he was waiting for or something. But either way, that's what happened. They life preserver, you're assuming dead. Dad's face down in the water, dead. And then you see this kid, like, struggling, trying to... You don't get a good glimpse of him only because of the sunlight. The sunlight is hitting him in the face, and all you see is, like, the backside. So you kind of see, like, a silhouette of the person just kind of struggling in the water. So you don't even know which kid it is.
They don't show a child body, and there's a reason for that, and you're going to find that out much later.
The reason is because... The reason is... That's Chris's
favorite. Oh, fuck! What the fuck?
Oh, I thought Chris's house was on fire when he pulled we cut that. I'll show it to you one of these days, but... And then we get to my favorite part of the film, dude. Aunt, was there Martha or some shit like that?
Martha.
Oh, so, my God. Go ahead, dude.
So at this point, now it starts off with a regular house. It's nowhere. We're not talking about the lake anymore. This is 8 years later from that incident. Now, this is 8 years later. Now, all of a sudden, here comes this lady. I kid you not. She's all... She has her yellow sweater, her bonnet hat, her blue and red bonnet hat. She's a colorful character. She comes out. She's all, children, you're going to be late for the bus. No, that wouldn't be good at all. Her name is Martha. And just the way I acted out right now, that's exactly how she acts in there. It's you would probably say terrible, bad acting. Honestly, she sticks out like a sore thumb. She is weird.
Oh yeah, dude. But it's so weird. But I it's like we all could agree it's weird. But I love that shit.
The way she calls for the kids, my mom used to call for us like that.
Kids, you gotta be late for the bus. She's thinking.
She does. So she even, but she doesn't even just, you know, just say that. She even says, she's all, oh, I made you all some snacks to take on your trip to camping. Oh, that was nice of me.
Is there chips? Yes, a whole bag.
A whole bag. You know, she's overly, like, I like that. It's just, it doesn't fit well because, like, the kids come down, and the kids, funny enough, it's Ricky, a little boy who happened to be – the parents are separated, so he was with his dad during that whole accident. But guess who the other child is? Angela. And like I said, the names before was John, which was the dad, Peter, and then there was Angela.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're getting to that point. So now we're like, oh, okay, Angela survived. Wow, good for her. Mm-hmm. So now we're talking, and Ricky and Angela, they act normal. They are normal kids. And I kid you not, that Ricky, man, he really acts like an – like it's just an everyday thing. Like I love
Ricky, dude. He is fucking.
Ricky was a badass. He's like I kid you not. For this whole summer camp feel, I'm gonna go ahead and say that he's like the John Connor. Just you know, he throughout this movie, he has a lot of aggression and he shows a lot of anger, but that's mostly to protect. You see that he has a lot of love and a lot of protection, that he cares about his cousin Angela. So now you can kind of get the idea that, well, that's his cousin. So because of the dad passing away, now where's the mom? There's not really a mention of the mom, but the dad died, the brother died, so now it's just her living with her cousin and his mom.
You know who I thought of Ricky as in this film? I thought of him as being very similar to Michael in Phantasm 1.
Yes. Yes, I would definitely say that he is like a Phantasm 1. You know, he's definitely like him. As far as this goes, so the mom starts acting a little more weirder as normal, you know, and we're just like, okay, let's get over with it. So they're getting ready to go ahead and jump on the bus so they can go to Camp Arawak. That's the name of this camp. So they're getting ready to go, but here the mom's like, oh, hold on, before I forget, and just to make sure I didn't forget, I tied a little string around my finger. Yes. Yes, I did. Okay, well, forget what? Even her son was like, what aren't you forgetting?
Oh, no, it's like she's Billy Bailey from It's a Wonderful Life, tying strings on her fingers.
Yeah, and she's, I don't know, she's caught up in her own little world. She's a little... She seems a little weird. She's probably having her own personal flashbacks or something. But anyway, she goes and runs off. She comes back, and she says, here's your physicals. You know you can't go to camp without your physicals, but whatever you do, don't tell them where you got it from, even though I am a doctor. Huh, that is weird. I'm like, what? Lady, calm down. Just give them the damn papers that they need and let them be off their way.
I love that when she's doing that, every time she does it, she puts her, like, her finger by her chin like she's really thinking.
She is. That's what I said. I don't know if she's having a personal moment. Like, you know, they usually go in the movies, they internal thought, they flashbacks, things like that. No, but this does it without all that, and now they just seem like a crazy. So anyways, at this point, the bus is already arriving. Angela and Ricky end up getting off, and there's all the kids. They're all running towards their cabins. Everyone's running with their bags and everything. There's all the kids ready to just have that summer fun. They're having that summer feel. They're catching up with old friends, and they even mention Judy. Now, Judy happens to be one of the bullies in this movie for the girls. Now, of course, I don't know if anyone's ever been to camp. But the way it goes is that camp is usually split up. They don't have the boys and girls mixed in the same cabins. They have them separate. So the girls' side and then the boys' side. So as far as this goes, everyone's going. They're getting ready to log into their cabins, get all settled in. So they're catching up with old friends, and they catch up with Judy, who I guess apparently had some kind of history with Ricky from the previous summer. But apparently now she's more mature, she's more snotty, she has more of a figure, and you'll notice a lot of the counselors,
Jailbait Judy.
Yeah, I kid you not, all these counselors, everybody looks so much older, but their ages are supposed to be younger.
Yeah.
So their age does not match their bodies. The only ones that actually really do are Angela and Ricky.
Yeah.
As for everybody else, they, you know, there's kids in there, don't get me wrong, but for the most part.
The ones that we hear talk, for the most part, yeah.
You don't mean to tell me a movie would use early 20s people to play teenagers.
Especially around this time, right? This is the time they would play that game. So, always have someone older. They're, like, supposed to be, like, you know, like you're saying, all supposed to be, like, in high school, and they're all, like, 30 and shit.
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, it's like every Nightmare on Elm Street, damn near, you know?
Pretty much. That's not even a joke there. I mean, that's the damn truth. Now, at this point, so all the kids are all getting ready to log into the cabins, and guess who's all standing right there on the sidelines watching everybody unload?
Chris.
we got some of the workers there. And one of the workers, which seems to come off as quite an asshole, is Artie. He is the head cook. Now, I kid you not, this guy, he's already showing signs of being a pedophile. He's already comes off as a rapist. He's not a nice guy. So he's already making comments to his other fellow cook, who happens to be Robert Earl Jones. Now, this one I was surprised because I didn't even catch this. I mean, this was all Joey's doing. He's all like, oh, that's what's his name?
James Earl Jones, yeah.
James Earl Jones' dad. That blew me away. And I was like, what?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't either. I was like, oh, man, that threw me all crazy. So,
Artie, yes. They're too young to even know what you're talking about. Where I come from, we call them baldies.
So, yeah, the asshole Artie head cook ends up, he's all, back in my days, we used to call them baldies. And then here goes Ben, who's the dad, Robert Earl Jones. He ends up replying, these kids wouldn't even know what you're thinking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I can show them. You know, he's
with the toothpick in his mouth and everything. He's just fucking.
Yeah, he's licking his lips. He's looking like a weirdo already. So there you go. Boy. So they go ahead and everyone's getting ready. Everyone's doing their thing. Everyone's catching up with old friends. And so by this point, you know, Angela, I kid you not, she does not want to talk. She has like the easiest acting deal ever because she does not want to talk throughout this whole damn movie. She has a couple of words here and there, but that's about it.
Yeah.
So at this point, they catch up with all their friends and they end up getting logged into their cabin. So now they're all getting, they go ahead and catch up with them. They all meet up and they're getting ready to, you know, they're introducing like all the bullies. They're already showing like snotty attitudes. They're like, Judy is definitely one. Like I said, she's like the bully of it and she's already picking on her. And there's some other people along the way that'll end up picking on her. Now,
shower with us. Are you scared to show that you have no hair down there? And I'm like, since when is that a bad thing?
Try not to move, try not to make a sound. Hearing his footsteps all around. Cause there's a killer. A killer on the run.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because you know how the times have changed, right? Like now it's like, oh, like, you know, that's you're expected to be groomed, you know. And then back then it's like, well, if you had hair on your balls, you were like, I'm a mad kid, you know. So that's pretty funny, dude. That back then it was like, oh, you don't got hair down there, you know, you're a pussy, something like that.
No, this was the girls that were like, how come Angela didn't shower with us? She's scared she hadn't gone through puberty yet, has no hair down there. And I'm like, since when is that a bad
thing? Yeah, well, I'm saying, like, even for them, I mean, we're not girls, but I'm sure, like, they might have similar things to where I'm a woman now, whatever, so.
It's like having a bush or something.
Yeah, it's like, I got a full-grown bush, bitch. Oh, Christopher.
Now, at this point, so already, like, a day or two has already gone by, and Angela is, like I said, she's a mute throughout this whole thing. The most she does is, like, stare at you. And
She's got a weird stare, right? I'm like, I'm watching it, and I'm like, oh, shit.
She has the biggest eyes. I mean, they are huge.
And a piercing
gaze. So when
gaze.
She stares at you, she's like burning a hole right through you. She
piercing gaze.
Oh, she does. She has like this crazy stare. So anyways, everyone that talks to her, she doesn't really answer. She doesn't really say anything. She stares at them. So a lot of people get frustrated, or they assume, you know, they assume other things out of her, like she's crazy or mentally ill. Anyways, at this point, they're all in the dinner hall, and they're all sitting down, and she's not even touching her food. So all of a sudden, they start picking on her about saying how she's too good for the food and all this. And anyways, one of the counselors, which is Ronnie. Now, this guy is a buff dude. I mean,
Yeah.
He's supposed to be a young guy, but man, he looks like he's in his damn 30s, and he's buff. So he comes over here, and he's all like, look. He's all, you don't like the food? Is something wrong? I've heard you haven't been eating in a while. So Angela, you know, she's just giving that blank stare. She's just like, what? You know, I don't want to eat. So he's, I'll tell you what, let's go around to the back of the kitchen. Let's take a look around and see if we can introduce you to someone and see if we can find you something to eat. Maybe something that you like. So
and
the girls are already getting jealous. They're
and
already.
Sorry. This is before sexual assault lawsuits because, you know, here's an adult male grabbing a minor female by the hand, taking her to a private room. You couldn't do that today.
Yeah. Now, well, like, and at this point, they take her around back. Ronnie, one of the counselors, introduces her to the head cook, which is Artie. We already know that he's a scumbag. And he's all, look, I got a phone call. Something came in. I got to go over here. Let me go ahead and take this. Angela, just follow Artie. He'll go ahead and show you. Maybe there's something you like to eat. Oh, I'll show you something you'll like to eat. Yeah. He's all perving already on her. Damn girl is like, she has to be like 12 or 13 years old. She's not even that much older than, you know, just some small kid. She's not even she might not even be a teenager at this point. Either way, so he takes her around, just like Chris was saying, grabs her by the hand, you know, takes her around back, and he's all, oh, I could show you something you might like. He's already unbuckling. Anyways, Ricky, like I said, he's very protective of her. He's already asking questions like, hey, where's my cousin? Where's Angela? Oh, she wasn't eating, so they took her around back to see if she can find something to eat. Oh, okay. So he wanders off back there, you know, no one's questioning anything. He happens to walk into the pantry, and sure enough, Artie's like, oh, crap. You know, he's trying to buckle up. So he's like, hey, what are you doing to my cousin? Oh, he's, man, Ricky is just like a little badass, man. He's a firecracker.
Right
so
away,
he's already
right?
Like,
yeah.
He's already threatening, huh?
Yeah, like right away, like you see him, hey, what are you doing? And he's like, you didn't say nothing. You didn't say nothing.
Yeah, Artie goes ahead and grabs the little kid, Ricky, and starts throwing him against the wall like, you didn't say nothing, nothing. And he's all like, oh, shit, okay, I didn't say nothing. All right, come on, Angela, let's get out of here. So they take off, and he's all like. So he comes out of the damn pantry, and Mel, who's this older, I guess he's the guy who runs the camp. He's the head chief of this whole of this place. He always has a damn cigar in his mouth.
Yeah.
So anyways, he's all, "What? Why did those kids run? Oh, I don't know. They I must have scared them. Yeah, I scared them." And he's all buckling his belt and everything, all perving.
He's buckling that belt the whole time he's walking out of there. I was laughing. I was like, Jesus Christ, he's still buckling that shit, you know?
Yeah, so we're just like, what the hell? Like, no one questions anything. Okay, so they take off. No one says anything. Later on in the day, Artie's all pissed off. You know, this is the head cook. He's all irritated. We can only assume it's probably because he didn't get any from that little girl. So he's boiling a huge pot of water. And this is already, we're going to start up with our first accident. So he's boiling up a huge pot of water. You're just like, what the hell? You know, he's getting ready to throw some corn in there. He's going to boil some corn and everything, get it all ready for dinner time. And so they got the water boiling. Ben's like, hey, I'm going to take off real quick. I got something to do. Oh, okay, cool. I'll be here. The pot is so high up that he can't look into it to see, like, how bubbling it is, like how boiling it is. Mm-hmm. So he has to grab a chair to step on to take a look inside. So while he's doing that, while he's above it and he's like throwing some salt and everything, he's trying to get some stuff going for the kids for dinner. All of a sudden, you see like a point of view, like if you've ever seen like Psycho, or you seen like Black Christmas, or you seen any of these point of view where it's the killer, but you don't see it. You only see it through the killer's eyes.
That's, I was thinking about that earlier. I was like, well, this is one of the first films to where you see a point of view where you don't know who the killer is. I was like, no, that was from, you know, Friday the 13th. And then I was like, and then I forgot about like, oh, Psycho 2, where you kind of don't really see what's going on from that. So it's cool. They used all the old tricks and they, you know, from movies prior, or, you know, from past. So,
Definitely. This definitely, it definitely involves a lot of those old type of, we want to say like this is another typical slasher film, but by the end of this, we're going to realize that, oh, there's a little trick to this that doesn't make it so typical. But yeah, I mean, it definitely, it has that point of view where it's the killer, but we don't get to see it. So we're only trying to assume like who it might be. So at this point, the Artie, the head cook, the perv, ends up, he's above the pot and everything, and he's doing his little thing, throwing his little spices and stuff. Well, guess who comes up right behind him is the killer and pushes him forward, and he's like, oh, shit. Well, he's right above the pot, but there's a little shelf where it holds all the spices, so he grabs onto it, and he's like, oh, shit. You little asshole, I could have killed you, I could have died, blah, 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 or got hurt really bad. All of a sudden, you see the hand of the killer grab one of the legs of the chair and pull it out. And he's like, whoa, 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 what are you doing? Come on, quit playing around, now help me down. He's freaking out. Because what's going to happen, he's right above the pot of hot, boiling, scalding water. So, as you know, the attention starts rising every time they keep pulling out the chair. Eventually, they pull out the chair from underneath him. He has no other choice, but I guess out of reflex, he grabs onto the pot trying to gain his balance. That huge pot of water splashes right all over him. He's there screaming. They show him, his skin is bubbling, it's boiling. He's disgusting.
I was laughing because he was yelling for a long ass time too, because he's like, skin's boiling and all that. And I was like, oh my god, another funny moment. But it's like, well, yeah, that's like, you know, basically what would happen too. You're like, oh god, damn you all to hell.
He was screaming like the whole damn time. So think about it. This whole moment was extremely intense, because you got to think, the moment he got splashed, he was already screaming. So it already took a little bit until Ben came in, and he's in shock by what he's seeing. So the minor cook, he's in shock. He's watching the whole thing, and he's still screaming. So all of a sudden, then it jumps. Time lapse forward, and it's, I can only assume it's probably a couple of hours, because they got the ambulance out there. He's all bandaged up, not just from his arm, but like around his whole body, and he's still screaming. So do you imagine how many hours he's been screaming the whole time, the moment he got splashed, up until that point where they finished bandaging him up, getting him on the stretcher, and getting him out of there? That was definitely more than like 4 or 5 hours worth of damn screaming.
I laughed. I don't know if it was a cop or a doctor or whatever. And they're like, what's the prognosis, doc? Or something like that. He's like, well, he's burnt pretty bad.
Yeah. So it's the damn doc. And it's Mel. Mel is the head counselor. Everyone's kind of gathered around, the workers, the minor chef, he's there too. Everyone's gathered around. They're listening to this guy being wheeled out on a stretcher, you know, screaming. And so they're all like, man, well, accidents happen, you know, this and this. And he's all, so what's the prognosis, Doc?
Yeah,
this is the one who says that is Mel, the head owner of this camp. He's like, what's the prognosis? Well, he's been scalded with hot boiling water all over his body. He's been screaming. Every inch of his nerves are all caught on fire. So they should feel like he's been on fire the entire time. So yeah, I feel bad for him. Did he lose his eyesight? Well, we can't tell yet. It's still too early. I was like, wow. I was like, okay. Well, he says, well, I'm sorry. But now at this point, it seems kind of weird because now you're starting to look at this old guy, Mel, because he ends up saying, well, let's keep this quiet. He's telling Ben this. He's all, keep it quiet. Yeah. We're going to have to keep it quiet. I don't want any of this to shock the other kids. So let's just kind of keep it under wraps. If anybody asks anything about Artie, we'll just say he went and got another job. Now, all of a sudden, that kind of makes it seem a little weird, but I understand his point of view. Like, you don't want to tell the kids anything like that. But again, like I said, it seemed weird that he wants to say this in private. I guess you don't have to think about it too much, but it kind of continues on like that through the rest of this movie. As the accidents and deaths start happening, he starts trying to hide these accidents. And you'll find out there's a reason for it later on. So by this point, Artie's out of the picture. They gave the minor chef the head chef role now. And so now he's in charge of, you know, making the food, and same thing with all the workers. They're all supposed to keep this whole accident hush hush. Again, we don't know who the killer is. All we saw was, you know, some hands. So now it goes back to the kids, and now it's all summer fun. We're all having a good old time. And by this point, Ricky's already starting to, he gets more aggression throughout this movie as they start picking on Angela. He ends up having some minor arguments with some like an older group of teenagers in comparison to where he's at.
Yeah, I know. Go ahead, dude.
I like to call them the Brand X Cobra Kai.
Yeah, they are like that, right? They got one's got a mullet, the other one's got like that classy kind of look, like, you know what I mean, shirt tucked in, dressy shirt.
They're these older, taller, slightly more built, you know, asshole kind of kids. But they're a second-rate Cobra Kai, though. They're not the badassery of, like, 1984 Karate Kid 1, I'll tell you that.
They're a third-rate, Chris. Yeah, they're fucking, I thought the same thing. I'm like, not the Cobra Kai thing, but I was all like, man, you know, Ricky's pretty young to be getting picked on by such older kids. Like, maybe if they're, like, slightly older than him, but they're, like, you know, or like, they're the same age but a little taller. But, like, no, they're, like, you could tell they're at least 3 or 4 years older, like, you know, big kids, dude, you know. Like, and that's saying, like, they're like, really, like, 20 or something. But, you know, Ricky's, like, what, 13-ish or some shit like that at the most, 12? So
yeah, he's like, about 13, too. He seems like about that, 12 or 13. Now, what's interesting, though, is that as badass as these guys are and they're tough as they are, Ricky does not back down from these guys at all. He does not give a shit.
He was in softball.
Yeah, and you know what? That's why
eat shit, live, Chris.
Yeah, they're all like, "Hey, eat shit and die, Ricky." Well, eat shit, yeah, eat shit and live. And I was like, "Oh man, that is a good comeback. Good for him." That's clever. <Yeah. laughs> You know, take the same shit and throw it back at them. Good luck.
I've been out of the running. All the days gone by with no memory. No photographs to show.
All right, so at this point, it fast forwards up until to this young kid, like one of the third-rate Cobra Kai, the one with the mullet. I forgot his name, but anyways, at this point, The guys end up daring him to go ahead and ask out Angela. Angela does not speak to anybody. She just gives him that blank stare. So he's all like, I'll make her come around. So they go ahead and try to pressure him to go ahead and ask her out, and he's like, I can do it. So he starts hitting on her. Of course, she doesn't give a stare, and he starts picking on her. There goes Ricky again. Now he's all defending Angela's, honor, like, hey, don't mess with her. That's my cousin, And so this guy's like, yeah, whatever. Screw her. She's like a freak, She's Looney Tunes, as what he called her. So then it fast forwards a little more. All of a sudden, him and the rest of the Cobra Kai group are out there, with a group of girls now. Now they're trying to egg on the girls to like, hey, let's all go skinny dipping. It's nighttime, Let's all have some fun in the damn lake. And they're like, I don't know. So of course the mullet, the guy that was making fun of Angela earlier, he actually eggs on one of the girls saying, hey, let me take you on a boat ride real quick. It'll be fun. It'll be cool. All right. So they get in the canoe and they end up, kind of going out there. All of a sudden he's telling her like, hey, you shouldn't touch the water or anything. Why? Well, there's snakes and turtles, and they'll definitely get at you, and you can die. No, that's not true. Well, anyways, he tips over the boat and they both go in the water. She's pissed off. She swims off. For some odd reason, I don't know why, but he thinks like since the boat is tipped over, let me go underneath the boat and, play around in there because it makes echoes. All right, fine. So he's all playing around. This shadowy figure comes up from underneath the water into the boat where he's at, and he's like, what the hell are you doing here? So technically he recognizes her. Well, yeah, what happens? He ends up grabbing his head, shoving him down in the water pretty much, and he's like struggling, trying to breathe. What happens? He ends up drowning. Well, the rest of the guys are like, hey man, where's their mullet friend? Where is he? Oh, I don't know. He's goofing off. He'll catch up with us later. Anyways, it jumps to morning.
I didn't even make that connection because I was like, I was like kind of like walking. I was just kidding. Like I'm watching the film, right? And like one guy goes, I gotta clean up all this shit. And he's on like, that's the guy.
They have like a bunch of shit outside. They got lawn chairs and all this bullshit. And so one of the counselors is all pissed off.
Yeah.
He's all like, I gotta clean this shit. I like to see him pick up something. And then he goes and grabs the boat. He sees the canoe on shore and he flips it over. And who's underneath? The damn
Chris
mullet guy.
Carob. No, okay, shit.
Yeah. And he's dead. He's dead. He's got a snake coming out of his mouth. Fucking disgusting. So there goes already one mullet kid. So you're thinking like, oh, okay, well, this is a... They're all like, man, this is pretty tragic. This is pretty terrible already. So, again, it jumps into the whole scene again. The police get there and they're... They don't know the prognosis. They don't know if this is an accident. They're saying it might be murder. It might be just a clear accident. In the meantime, Judy ends up picking on Angela again, and Angela's getting all sad. Angela actually ends up meeting a love interest. She actually favors one of the young kids there. So she's like, all right, well, he doesn't seem like an asshole in comparison to like, everybody else that's been, picking on me and acting like all, bunch of dicks or whatever.
His name is Paul, right?
Yeah, actually his name is Paul. That's the cousin, Ricky, oh. That's one of his best friends. So now at this point, Angela's already fed up with everybody. She wants to go and see her cousin. She's already been picked on enough. She wants to go and see her cousin in the boy side. The moment she goes over there, she gets whacked by one of Cobra Kai's, leaders again. So he goes, they're on the roof. They're on the roof playing water balloon fight.
Oh, I love this scene.
Not on the floor, not on the ground, but they're on the roof of the cabin, running around, jumping around, throwing water balloons at each other, not ignoring the fact that they could fall off and break their leg or head or something. So anyways, they hit Angela, they see her coming, they hit her, here comes Ricky being a badass, like threatening to kill and kick all their asses.
I'll kick your fucking ass.
I popped when he goes, I'll kick your fucking ass all over his camp, you fucks.
Yeah, dude. I was laughing. I was like, this little guy is the, like, that was it. I was like, man, this is. See, like, you'll never see something like that in a quality movie where everyone's like, people are just like, hey, we need you to act crazy and get pissed off, and then they just let them go. You know, that was Ricky, just like, they told him, hey, just talk a lot of shit, like, you want to kick their asses. He's just like, yeah, you could tell everyone was just doing, you know, like, they had an idea, but they wouldn't just did it themselves. There was a script, but it wasn't like all verbatim kind of shit. And it was like, great, dude. So,
yeah, this kid Ricky is a badass, man. I kid you not. He's talking shit. He's telling them all kinds of shit. I'll kill you. You freaking idiots. And so now at this point, you're suspecting that, well, man, he's showing a lot of anger and a lot of aggression. But, you know, that's way over the top, especially all the shit that he's saying. So I don't know. Maybe we're suspecting that he might be the killer. Anyways, as it goes on, as hours end up passing on by, it shows one of the leaders for that Cobra Kai group. And he's all like, hey, guys, well, I'll catch up with y'all later. I got to go take a shit. So he's in one of the stalls. Well, guess what happens? He gets locked in the damn stall without him knowing it. They slide like a broom over like the damn, like these handles.
Door handles, and, yeah.
Yeah, the door handles. They end up sliding a broom there just to kind of lock him in. But he doesn't realize that. He's too busy, like, you know, fucking off in the damn stall, you know, trying to take a shit. Well, all of a sudden, right behind him happens to be a screen window. All of a sudden, you see a hand with a damn big-ass knife coming up right behind that window. So you're thinking, like, oh, shit, he's going to get stabbed to death. No, that's not what happens. What happens is that they use the knife to go ahead and tear a hole into the screen. All of a sudden, you see a stick with a beehive at the end of it. And he's like, no, no, what are you doing? Quit fucking off. Let me out. Let me out. And all of a sudden, they're shaking it. There's bees coming out of it. And they drop that beehive right there where he's at. And so here he goes. He's busting into the... He's going ahead and he's busting into the trying to bust out of the damn stall. And he can't do it. There's like bees flying everywhere. He's screaming half to death. Finally, he busts out. He falls down. He is like swollen. He looks terrible. He's got bees all over his face. He's good as dead. I mean, that's it. So at this point, the head counselor, the camp owner, what's his name, Mel, he's all like, oh, there's something going on here. There's a killer. And he's talking to Ronnie, and Ronnie's like, well, we don't know that. It could just be, he's all, I think I might know who it is. I have my suspicions. Look, you can't just make assumptions. This is Ronnie he's talking to, the buff guy in the beginning.
Yeah.
You know. So he's talking to him. He's all like, look, man, you don't know that. He's all, no, 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 I have my suspicions. I know. I just need some more proof. Yeah, yeah. Well, here's another highlight. As it starts, so it moves on forward, and he goes on to Angela playing around with the guy she's liking, Paul. Mm-hmm. So they're goofing around. They're making out, and all of a sudden he's attempting to take off her clothes. Well, he's trying to take off her clothes, and all of a sudden she's getting into that blank stare, and she's kind of looking off into space. All of a sudden, now she's going to have a flashback. She has a flashback, and she remembers her and her brother looking through a door. And looking through that door, she's having, more like a imagery kind of flashback. She sees her dad, John, with, remember that guy I mentioned in the beginning? The one that says, John, oh, that must be his friend. Well, you end up finding out that that's his lover. So them being kids, they're like, oh, that's funny. All of a sudden, it goes into like this weird kind of hypnosis kind of trans deal where the little boy is pointing at the little girl.
Yeah.
The whole room is spinning around. You're just like, what the hell? This doesn't make any goddamn sense. What the hell is that? And he's just pointing at her the whole time. All of a sudden, it comes back to Angela and Paul, and she freaks out. And she's like, no, no. You know, and she freaks out and she runs. So that's a highlight. That's probably worth remembering. Mm-hmm. Now, as it gets farther into it, you know, Angela's like, she's already having like some emotional issues, and Ricky's like saying, "Hey, we need to go ahead and do something. Help me out with this like capture the flag deal." Angela's like, "All right, fine, I'll help you." They wander into the woods. They see Paul making out with Judy. Now, Judy, again, like, she's already been picking on her the whole time, and she knew exactly what she was doing. So she started making out with Paul. Angela sees this. Now they're like, you know what? Fuck this guy. You know, this guy's already started cheating on me, and we're not even together yet. Fuck this guy.
Yeah.
So now it goes on further, and so now Angela's pissed off at everyone. Judy's all pissed off at the girl. Paul is, like, trying to say he's sorry. And Mel right now, Mel, the owner of the camp, has his suspicions about Ricky. And Ricky's just like, you know, there's a lot of assholes here. I'm just trying to protect my cousin. We're trying to have a good time. What the hell you keep talking to me about? So at this point, it goes back to the head counselor. And this is another death scene where one of the young girls actually might have a thing for the head counselor.
Yeah.
And he's an older guy.
I was like, what the fuck is, I was like trying to like, is she working him or what's the whole point? But yeah, it's like, no, she just dug him, right? Or whatever the fuck.
Yeah. She seems like an older teenager, doesn't she? She's like 16 or something.
Yeah. Yeah. She's supposed to be 16-ish. Yeah. Jailbait Judy, dude.
Yeah. And well, the head, Mel, the head, you know, camp owner, he looks like he's in his 60s.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, he's an older guy. Anyways, he ends up, earlier in the movie, he ends up offering that girl dinner. She comes back later on, and she says, "Hey, remember that dinner you promised me?" "Yeah." "Well, can I still get it?" "Yeah, stop by my place, 9:30 tonight." "Oh, right, I'll be there." So she runs on back to her cabin. She's like, "I gotta get ready, you know. I gotta get ready for this, you know, hot date."
Fucking Lou Pearlman, this guy.
Yeah. So she goes back. She's attempting to wash up, but there's a long line. So she tells Judy, like, "Hey, is there any other shower?" There's like, "Yeah, yeah, go next door." Okay. She runs next door to go take a shower in that cabin where the shower is. It's, you know, it's vacant. There's nobody there. So she's like, "Yeah, I'm gonna go and take a quick shower." All of a sudden, her back is, like, close to the damn wall of the shower. All of a sudden, here's that hand again. There's the killer, you know, comes out with the knife and stabs right through the wall and right into that lady's back, that young girl. So ends up slicing her right from the top of her spine right down to her butt crack. Yeah, so at this point, she's, like, already, like, dying. Here's the camp counselor, the owner, Mel, he's, like, wondering, like, well, where the hell is she, you know? So he's off, like, trying to look for her. In the meantime, you see some young kids with another camp counselor called Eddie. They're out camping they're getting ready to camp out in the woods. So anyways, they're out there trying to camp into the woods. That guy, Eddie, ends up taking off. He ends up taking off because he needs to get matches or something like that back from the fireplace because the kids are saying that it's... Now, when I say kids, these are kids that they look like they're 8, 9 years old, probably even 10. So they look really young. At this point, he runs back. The kids are complaining that it's cold, so he needs to start a fire. So he runs off. By the time he comes back, I couldn't even tell that these were dead bodies. But there's blood, there's red in there, and it's like mangled, you know, sleeping bags. I don't know about you guys. I don't know if you can tell that those were dead bodies, but it just looked like a damn mess. It looked like a bunch of, you know, yeah, it looked like a mess. You know, it looked like trash.
I didn't really see it. I was just kind of like, man, this movie's fucking dark when they're out there.
yeah, like when. When they're out in the woods,
They're like, "Can we go back?" They were doing all that bullshit, right? I think I remember that now. Yeah, what you're saying.
Yeah, the kids didn't want to go back. So anyway, the kids didn't want to go back. They're like all freaking out. So anyway, so it goes back. So it shows Ronnie, and he's already he gets a phone call, and he gets a phone call from Eddie about the kids, you know, like, hey, they're all dead. You know, oh my God, are you serious? Yeah, yeah, they're all dead, you know, that just dead, you know, there's blood and shit. Oh shit, you know, I gotta call the cops, you know. So they go ahead and call for help. And then all of a sudden it trailblazes and it turns into Ricky. All of a sudden we're following Ricky. And, you know, he's off, like, you know, he's off, I guess, going back to his cabin or something. Mm-hmm. Anyways, now it jumps off to Mel, and Mel ends up catching up with him. And Mel's like, you did it! You did it! Now, at this point, we didn't realize that...
That was his... We thought, yeah.
Yeah, at this point that we realized that Mel found the young girl, and he found her dead. Now he feels like his suspicions about Ricky is really true. So he catches up with Ricky, starts slapping the crap out of him, and he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. You did it. You killed her, and you killed the other ones. What are you talking about? I don't know. Pretty much beats Ricky down to a pulp. Like, Ricky's down on the ground. He's bleeding. He's, like, freaking out. You know, and
I thought he was going to kill him because I didn't remember the movie, like all the little, like, specific scenes. So when he's there, like, giving him the beat down, I'm like, you know, is he going to kill him, dude? You know, I was like, this is fucked up.
I mean, to do that to a little kid, and the guy's like 60-year-old. He's a 60-year-old man, and he's, like, beating the hell out of this kid.
Yeah, it's
well,
fucked up.
Well, also, too, for another murder, right before Mel ended up finding out what happened to that girl, Judy ends up getting her just desserts. Now, at this point, now Judy's like, what the hell was going on? What are you doing here? Again, we don't know who the killer is. She's just saying things just to kind of leave things kind of questionable, a little mystery in there. Well, anyway, she gets slapped in the face or punched in the face, and she gets knocked out. And she's starting to wake up. All of a sudden, there's a pillow put into her face, and she has a curling iron right next to her. Well, the killer decides to put the pillow over her face to hold her down while she goes ahead and while the killer grabs the curling iron. And, well, as though you don't see it, it's left to interpretation that, well, it was stuffed down there. Down there in that lady's, well, you know what, and well, she's dead. They
that is exactly
her.
What I thought when I watched.
Huh?
That is exactly what I thought when I watched it.
Exactly. That's what I thought too. But again, they don't show that. They just show like the shadow of it, and they show the hand bringing it up, and you see the face, and all of a sudden she's, you know, they shove it down there. So pretty much, she's screaming for her life, and. Well, they stuff her body right behind right behind her bed. So, now fast forwarding. Mm-hmm. So now we know that Judy's dead. We know the young girl is the young girl that wanted to sleep with Mel is dead. Now all of a sudden, here's Angela. She shows up. We're like, oh, there's Angela. Where the hell was she the whole time? Well, she went to go and look for Paul, the love interest, and Paul's like. Oh man, you're gonna forgive me, right? You're gonna forgive me. He's all, yeah, yeah, yeah. Just come with me, okay?
Fucking so, begging for forgiveness, that guy.
He was. He really liked her, but you know, being a young kid, I mean, you're a young, horny kid, and all you're looking for is, you know, a certain attention.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And he was hoping to get that from Angela, but. At this
shit,
point, you know.
Shit, just kissing a girl when I was like 11 or 12 or 13 was like, oh my God, you know, like, Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
If you're traveling down to the North Country Fair,
at this point, so now we realize, like, you know, Paul is just looking for affection, you know, just like all the other guys that are there. They don't have cell phones. They don't have iPads. They don't got nothing. I mean, this is the 80s. The most fun that they're going to have is doing stuff with each other playing pranks or running around outside doing, you know, whatever they're supposed to do. Now, this isn't no Christian camp or anything like that, so there's no good deeds and stuff like that. This is just, you know, this is the 80s. I mean, these kids, you know, if they have an idea to do something funny, they're going to do it.
This is your basic two-week summer camp that people used to go to in the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Yeah, exactly. So now at this point, now, so Paul's like, okay. So he ends up running into Angela. Angela's like, hey, Paul. And he's all like, oh, you forgive me? She's like, yeah, I forgive you. Hey, why don't we go and do something? Do what? Let's go in the lake. Really? You want to go in the lake? Yeah, but take off all your clothes. Yeah, I will. So he's all super excited. He's all thrilled about this. And he's like all excited. So he starts ripping off his clothes and everything. So now, guess who arrives? The police officers. So now they go ahead and investigate the woods, just like they ended up saying that there was these kids that end up getting killed in the woods. So now they go ahead and go to the camp counselors and explaining to them, look, there's these kids, they're dead, something's going on, someone's killing people, we got to alert everyone. So now all of a sudden all the murders are starting to come to light. Just like in Friday the 13th when all the deaths start popping up out of nowhere.
They start falling from the rafters and shit. Every time someone walks into a room, that shit always made me laugh.
Yeah, so at this point, this is exactly what's going on. So then they go ahead and find Ricky. Ricky's beaten down to a pulp, and so they're carrying his ass out of the damn, you know, close to the woods. Mm-hmm. The other camp counselors are like, hey, we got to go and find these other missing kids. You know, let's go and look for them. So there's Ronnie, and he's with this other camp counselor. They're off looking around for them. Well, guess what? They see someone humming out in the distance by the lake. Who is it? Is that Angela? That isn't Angela. Hey. Well, so she's off humming her own thing, and she's doing something, and it looks like someone's laying down in her arms. So now you're like, oh, it's Paul. Oh, they're doing something romantic, right? Well, this is a slasher film, so you can only assume that he's dead. So you're like, oh, okay, well then, what happens? It's a flashback. So now we go back to Martha, this weird lady from the beginning. Yep, we weren't done with her yet. So she goes ahead. She comes out, and she's like, oh, well, it's so great that you come to live with us, Angela. Yes, Angela, that's going to be your name. We can't have two boys in the house, so we're going to have to make you a girl. Isn't that right, Peter? I mean, Angela. Yes, yes, Angela. Oh, named after an angel. Yes, yes. It has to be right. I know it. Mm-hmm. And so you realize, like, wow. So Peter survived in the beginning, not Angela, the other sister. Mm-hmm. So the brother ended up surviving from that boat accident. So you're like, okay, so it's the brother. He just took on the sister's name. And because he went to go live with Martha, which is Ricky's mom, that's their family now. So yeah, the mom always wanted a damn daughter, so they made the little boy into a girl. So kind of made him a little insecure, a little wacko, because he just didn't want to be a girl. So what happens? Now it jumps flash forward back to the scene where Ronnie and the other camp counselor finds Angela. Well, Angela, she stands up and she's like, rah! She's making this terrible hissing, growling noise. Now get this. What falls to the floor? Oh no, it's Paul. His head. Head was removed from his body. Well, poor Paul. Well, he just got too much of something. He got more than what he asked for.
He bit off more than he could chew, Daddy.
Honestly, I think he would have wanted it that way.
Yeah.
Well, why did you say that? Well, the reason why he would have wanted it that way, having his head chopped off, because Angela stands up and she's growling and hissing. She's nude. Not just nude, but she's showing her full junk. She is full on nude, full on everything. And, well, you see her junk, and, well, she's a dude. Paul, I'm pretty sure, did not know that that was a dude. And so I bet you he was like, in his perspective, I bet you he was confused, scared, and freaking a mess. So, pretty much, nobody really wants to die, but at that moment, you're just like, oh, you're pretty disgusted. I'm not trying to be homophobic or anything like that. I'm just saying, because of the times, his ideal character was to, you know, go after girls and everything, and the way they are for the 80s, this is probably his mentality, and this is probably what he was thinking. Like, no, again, nobody wants to die, but at that point, you're pretty
much... yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you're a straight guy and you like girls, and you know, you think you're you know, you've been following this chick and you're like, you want to kiss her, whatever they've done, all of a sudden you're like, oh fuck. He's like, oh shit, kill me now.
that was pretty disgusting too. Again, you forget about this whole movie and about all the murders that happened on here. There are moments in here that they could cut out. I felt the intro to the movie was a bit long.
Yeah, I put it on yesterday to watch it in full, and you know, I was doing my little stepper, and I'm like, can this movie fucking start already? It's just like, bah, showing the house. I'm like, oh my god.
In honor of mother, a doer.
Yeah, I was like, oh my god. Then that intro kind of right away set the tone, like you said, and then. When we meet Aunt Martha, it kind of like, okay, now I felt better, and then we start meeting everyone. And then after that, like, it just seems like everyone we meet is just like constantly, like overacting, bad acting, but it fits so well that it's just like, it's good. You know what I mean? Like it fits perfect for this movie, you know, the over the top acting. So.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, honestly, like, again, like I said, like this, as long as this movie, the movie I think was an hour and a half long. Mm-hmm. And So with it being that long, there could have been a lot of things they could have cut out. But honestly, as long as it was building up, it was totally worth seeing the ending. Because Throughout that whole movie, that's the only thing that freaked me out. I was like, what the heck? I did not. When I first saw this movie, I've heard about it, but I never actually watched it. And then, Later on, I guess I was, oh man, I want to say I was like 15 at least, 15 or 16. And at Best Buy, they had a box set where it says four classic movies, you know, buy them today, you know, for the price of this and this on sale. And Best Buy used to have like a little discount area where they would just mark down movies or something like that. So they had like four chilling movies in there, and they were old, and I was like, yeah, sure, why not? I'll go ahead and go along with it. Why not? Well, I bought it, and Sleepaway Camp was one of them, so I put that on. That ending was terrifying. It was not that she was trans, but more so that it was unexpected, and Her just making that growling face, it was disturbing. It was a disturbing minute. Yeah, it was horrible. I was like, oh wow.
Yeah, the way she sells it at the end is what makes it. Yeah, it's like, you know, it doesn't matter who. It doesn't matter if it's a boy or girl. The thing is, it's that if it was a girl, if it was a guy that was really a girl, it'd be like, what the, you know, it's that trickery that the character did to everyone, and that, you know, you think this person's innocent, and they're like, you know, they're not, and it's just all these things that are like the opposite and strange. Like, so instead of being a girl, you're a guy, and instead of being this innocent girl, you're this evil person that's been killing everyone. Like, it's all like, wow, you know. So yeah, it was a real good twist, you know, like a twist ending if you didn't know it. So like, I know, Chris, you were saying like when you were watching it, like you had a feeling it was Angela. Like what made you feel like it was her? Like getting...
You know what, first I wasn't sure if it was Artie the cook being the killer. You know, maybe it was him coming back after, you know, healing up from his burn.
That would have been pretty good now that you say that.
That would have been good, but it wasn't him. And then as the movie went on, I started thinking, okay, maybe it's because they shipped guy under the boat with the brown-haired Mullah Cobra Kai guy that got killed. And I thought, okay, well, maybe it's Ricky. Maybe he's acting like, you know, nice, you know, stand up for his cousin babyface, but in reality he's killing people when they're not looking. So you think that, and then once you notice that they start really zoning in on the eyes of Angela, they do like the way Evil Dead does, where they zone in on things.
Yeah, yeah.
That triple, like, camera effect. And you start noticing they do that more than once. Then you start saying, you know what? This might be fucking Angela that's the killer.
Yeah, and honestly, they... You have that taste, that little tidbit that makes you feel that there is something wrong with her, because she's silent. She says a couple of words throughout the movie, but she doesn't do anything. So you kind of feel like, okay, there's something off-putting about her. But then you go to Ricky, and then he has so much aggression, you're just thinking like, well, there's something wrong with him, because no little kid should be that infused with anger. He is like, when he's pissed, he's generally just, he is pissed. He's pissed off at the damn world. He is angry. Then it goes off to, again, it goes off to Mel. And one of the tidbits that I was trying to say earlier is that, you know, he says like little things that we can't let the counselors know. We can't let the parents know. We can't let the kids know. Let's keep it under wraps. Keep quiet. We're just going to make up something. So you're just like wondering, like, why does he keep trying to cover everything up? You know, I think everybody should have a right to know. But in this case, you end up finding out close to the end that the reason why he was trying to keep it under wraps is because he didn't want to lose the popularity, I guess, of the camp. He didn't want it to get shut down.
Hurt his business.
Yeah. Huh?
Hurt his business, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so I suspected something, only because I've seen so many horror movies that I've always suspected, like, something going on with these characters. They're always trying to twist or hide something, and I kind of felt like there was something wrong with him doing that. But no, if anything, he was normal. It's kind of like watching Scream. You didn't know who the killer was, but they do these off little these off little tidbits that you're just like, maybe you are the killer, you know.
Then there's two killers, so you know that one part where it had to be that the boyfriend, it really wasn't, because there, you know, it was, but it is, but there's two killers, so it's kind of like they mess with you. So
that was like the biggest twist, and I love that one too. Yeah. It's still like a classic there.
Yeah, we'll eventually get to Scream 2. We're gonna do them all, and Chris is gonna be like, it's reminded me of when I was in third grade.
Well, they got the new Scream movie that's going to be coming out in January of next year. So I'm definitely hyped out about that. So I definitely want to go ahead and I'd love to review like some of these the Scream movies. Those are
I'm already rolling my eyes.
Huh? Oh, because Chris hates '90s movies like me, but I think I like the first Scream movie. It's horror. I think. Well, I haven't seen them.
Barrymore.
Yeah, I'm not gonna give you all a Scream review, but when I first saw that intro, I was like, "Holy shit!" I thought I was in for a crazy one. But yeah, I'm like you, Chris. I don't like a lot of that late '90s, you know, kind of horrors. But whoa,
yeah.
But anyway, let's get to rating these fucking bad boys, dude. I'm gonna let Chris go first, dude, because I want Chris to say what he feels and all that bullshit. Your overall thoughts, dude, and how many shots?
I'm gonna give it a solid 8.
All right.
It's a good movie, not the greatest movie ever. Probably could have had a little more fun if it had been Artie as the killer, you know, because, you know, it was this complete fucking scumbag, and Nasty comes back as like the evil febophilia fuck, you know, trying to get revenge on the kids he was trying to bang, you know, behind closed doors, but and his burns and everything. That would have told a very good story, and he was a very, you know, would have had a lot of charism to him, but it wasn't meant to be. That it was a good swerve, you know, like you don't see it coming. You don't see it coming, the idea that Angela is really Peter from the opening scene. You don't see it coming that she's really a boy. You don't see it coming that she's really a killer. So you don't see any of that, but you're following along. The characters are good enough. They're likable enough. I mean, the acting, we're not talking about, other than James Earl Jones' dad, we're really not talking about any kind of world-class known actors in this. But it was still good. It was still well, like, you know, that's just the standards they had in the 80s, that even for a film of this budget, you still had to be good enough to be able to portray that character and that story on the screen. So I was into it. It's a good little, it's a fun little quick watch. Like, the movie itself, outside the opening credits and outside the beginning intro, it's actually like an hour 24, but it keeps you engaged. It's short. It's a quick, fun watch. It's a murder mystery. You're following it. You want to see what it leads to, and it's good. It's not the greatest movie ever. It's not something you're going to make a sequel out of. It's not something that everybody's been talking about for the past 38 years, but it's good.
Well, they did make a couple of sequels out of it, so, but anyway, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're actually really, they're very similar, and I've seen two. I think I've seen parts. I haven't seen it all, but I've seen clips of two and three. They're pretty interesting. I'm sure we'll get to them eventually too. I want to get all the really good ones out the way, and then of course, you know, then we'll go back to some of the trashier ones because they're the way this one is. You know, if you thought this one's bad or whatever, like the other ones are like the same kind of like they're good but bad. But anyway, for me, I'm going to give it a 7.3 shots. I really like this film a lot. It's just the badness. I can't give it anything higher. It's like a 7.5, 7.3. It's definitely the one that I'm like, wow. If you want to throw something that has that 70s vibe, you know, but it's in the 80s, like a slasher mystery. To me, I thought it was much better than the original Friday the 13th. The Friday the 13th is kind of boring. Not much shit going on. Great ending, though. This one, from beginning to end, you know, it's bad, you know, but it's engaging. You have a lot of fun, and yeah, you laugh at it, you know. So you're like, you're just having a good time, dude. So, yeah, 7.3, 7.5, dude, for me. Gabe.
Yeah, definitely this movie is good. Like, it's not, I don't know how to say this, but I do watch this from time to time, mm-hmm. but it's not like a repeat, like constantly, like, yeah, I have to watch it again over and over in it. No, from time to time, I'll go ahead and throw it on because it's just, again, the kills are cool, the arguments and just how they carry on the conversations, you know. Angela Baker, you know, that's the main character, the one we're following, the mute. She's always staring at everyone with her big eyes. You know, that's Felissa Rose. You know, fantastic lady. I met her at a horror convention. She is a generally just a nice person. She even makes that same exact face at the end of the movie. She'll make it for you if you end up taking a picture with her. She'll make that exact same face. And she comes out in other movies too. She's still doing things now. And really awesome stuff. As far as the movie, 7.5, I'm definitely giving it that. You know, a lot of people care for this because they like to see the cross genders, you know, being serial killers. And, you know, it either adds like a different type of flair to the movie. Like you have Psycho. Remember Insidious? Mm-hmm. Insidious also has that. Yeah. So I think it's Insidious Part 2, right? You end up finding out the bride is it's a guy dressed up as a girl.
Yeah, Chris. And, Chris had brought that up. The whole Parker Crane gimmick. Yeah, I was like, no shit, dude.
Yeah, and it's pretty neat. I mean, they still do it. Like even more current movies. Even if you think about it, if you've seen Cult of Chucky, they do the same thing. Chucky, who's a guy, ends up getting into a girl's body. Mm. And he ends up getting into the girl's body, and so all of a sudden now he's, you know, a woman killer too. So, anyways, as far as the movie's fun. It's good. The only biggest twist, the terrifying part, I feel that makes you forget about the whole movie. It's just that ending. You're just like, what the hell did I just watch? You know,
it's kind of anticlimactic.
Yeah. Funny enough, though, it was funny. I was listening to Chris explain. He's all like, oh, it would have been great if Artie was the killer. You know, it would have been a good twist because he was burned and he comes back. He was describing exactly that same damn movie, The Burning, with Cropsey. Because that's exactly what happens. It's a summer camp feel. The janitor, these kids, Cobra Kai kids, end up playing a joke on... They end up playing a joke on the janitor. They end up setting him on fire by accident.
Oh shit!
And they think he's dead, but he comes back, but he comes back to get revenge the next summer. Those kids end up coming back, and he ends up, you know, whacking them all off one by one. So, yeah, you were like describing that movie, and I'm like, oh, well, no shit. I was like, yeah, that would be a good twist for a movie. Anyways, yeah, the burning. It's a prank.
That one's pretty hardcore. I've never seen the whole thing, but yeah, I know about it. Kind of like the way I'd seen Sleepaway. I've never sat there and watched it all, except for like way back when. And I can't even say watched it all, but like I knew of it. I saw clips of it. And now it's a little bit different to where like I kind of save them, even though, because it's like I know we're going to do some of these movies. So unless you tell me like, hey, check this one out. So anyway, right. These are always fun. These are always great. I think next week we're doing Halloween Resurrection. So I think I think that's what we're doing. Let me pull it up. Let me pull up the thing. Oh, no. Slumber Party Massacre. That's what we're doing. So
yeah.
Slumber Party Massacre, dude. That was another gay pick. So I'll probably end up watching
that movie too.
Yeah, I like to watch the movies on Sunday because it's like the day I get to just really take it all in and enjoy my Sunday watching a brand new horror movie for the most part, most of these ones. But you guys got anything else before we close out?
I mean, man, we talked about chicks and dicks and I mean, there's if you're looking for some topless titties, I think there is like a topless titty in here. But I mean, there's nothing. Classic 80s movie. It's a good movie. You know, you want a good twist at the for the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. You know, I'd say it's a good summer movie. That's what I have to say. It's a summer movie.
Sure. All right, everyone. Well, I hope you enjoyed this one. And we'll see you on the next one.
Man, you gotta be shitting me. That mother's strong.
Peace.
Peace.
Gotta go, Buffalo.